It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This sounds like someone who wants to make money, a lot of money, selling the baby body parts.
As the committee's exhibits indicate, web pages exist where a customer can click on a drop-down box that lists every organ of a baby for sale. You can click on a brain, a heart, eyes, or a scalp. Then you select your gestation period. Then you proceed to check out and you decide the method of shipment.
Based on that review, I believe a competent and ethical federal prosecutor could establish probable cause that both the abortion clinics and the procurement businesses violated the statute, aided and abetted one another in violating the statute, and likely conspired together to violate the statute.
Sandy Rios with you. That was the voice of Senator Ben Sasse, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, and a third congressperson. And you may recall, I know you do, that David Dalyden and the Center for Medical Progress came out with a series of videos this past year exposing the sale of human baby body parts. We were all appalled. We played them for you. We talked about them. And we've talked about this a lot. And we were disappointed when Congress did not defund Planned Parenthood, which was in the central player to all of this drama. We were disappointed. But what they did do was refer all of this information to a selective investigative panel. And they put Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn at the head of it. We've talked to her about this. But today I've asked for someone else to join us because he was on the front lines. Actually, even if he was behind the scenes, he was on the front lines choosing the people that would testify, organizing the testimony, and guiding this whole project for the past year. His name is March Bell. He was the Senior Counsel for Trafficking in Persons in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. He's been at Justice for a number of years. But in this particular instance, he was Staff Director and Chief Counsel for this Subcommittee on the Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, March.
Good morning, Sandy.
March, was this entire investigation based on the Dalyden Center for Medical Progress videos, undercover videos?
Well, in many ways, it was. The issue had come up before in the early 2000s, and from time to time, little bits of information had come out about the abortion industry, buying and selling baby body parts. But the undercover videos done by David Dalyden, we viewed as a good citizen report to the Congress about something that might be going on, something that was going on, and it was really the catalyst for Congress voting to form the select panel to look at the whole matter for a year in an in-depth way.
So, March, you're used to investigating, but it was a huge task. I know it was. And so, like as an overview, before we get into details, like what kinds of people did you have coming to testify?
Well, first of all, the first step in an overview would be the formation of the panel itself. Congress passes this resolution called a House resolution. It selects a chairman and members. We had majority members on our panel who were doctors, nurses, a former prosecutor, Chairman Blackburn with a long history of pro-life advocacy and a business background that understands the nature of markets, buying and selling, business records, why people go into business, how businesses are run. So first, the panel was formed. The next step was to form an investigative plan. And finally, implementing that plan, we sought to form models for investigation. We formed a model called the middleman model which is a business model where a middleman tissue procurement organization procures tissue from abortion clinics, packages it, and resells it to end users or customers, usually researchers. So we sought to form panels. We formed several of them. They included the middleman model, the university model, what we call the close proximity model, and we looked at NIH and some other institutions that were also buying tissue on a, in a high-volume way, institutions such as the University of Washington. So once we formed those models of the structure of the industry, and we were looking at this the way a Wall Street analyst would look at an industry in part. Once we saw understood the structure of the industry, then we could decide on witnesses. So we sought to get documents and witnesses from the middlemen, the people who are in the middle of the transaction, the people who are potentially profiting from the procurement and resale of the baby body parts.
Mm. And March, one of those big players was Stem Express, I remember. And just to remind people, I've forgotten her name, Kate. I think her name was Kate. She was
Kate Dyer.
The head of Stem Express, and the irony that her sister, she and her sister are very close, and her sister was the head of the John Boehner's like health panel, whatever. She was supposed to be his expert on health. So it was just a very ironic situation, and many of us wondered if that wasn't an entanglement that caused Boehner to drag his feet on this, on doing something about. Now that's my editorial remark, not yours. So Kate Dyer and Stem Express were part of the target of your investigation, but they did not respond well, did they, Marge?
No, they didn't. And we did a lot of research on how that corporation was formed. There's a lot of what we call open source research one can do, done in Bradstreet's filings with California Attorney General and Secretary of State. So we acquired a very good business background on that, understanding the business background of that company, and then sought its particular documents. It was at that point where they decided, we won't cooperate. We won't give you bank records. We won't give you accounting records. We won't give you tax records. We won't give you profit and loss statements. And your listeners may like to know that Congress, under the law, under the Constitution, has a right to these documents. It has a right to subpoena these documents and receive them from businesses. And they did refuse. And not only did they refuse, but we found from getting their bank records directly from their bank, that they were shredding documents and that they had hired a shredder, and that shredder came on site and shredded documents for days at a time that corresponded with congressional inquiries into that business.
March, you know, you have a long history. Let's get away from this just for a second. You have a long history serving the Congress in your capacity. You were counsel for the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Government Reform and Oversight. And I remember conversations with you about the Church Committee. And there were days, what I'm getting at, is there were times, most normal times for us, where Congress actually had power, where when people were subpoenaed or asked for things, they had to deliver, and there was some sort of enforcement. As you look back on your own experience with congressional committees and their ability to make entities respond and cooperate, what's changed?
Well, that's a very important question, Sandy, for your viewers and for the country as a whole and for the Congress. Congress is the House of Representatives in particular, are the people's representatives. They're the closest national leaders to the people. They're the ones that can hear from everyday citizens and issue subpoenas or ask for depositions and find out what's going on. And the Supreme Court makes very clear in Article 1 that the power to legislate is the power to investigate. And if Congress can't investigate the success or failure of its laws, then it can't pass good laws. It just so happens in this case that in 1993, there was a law passed that made it a federal felony to buy and sell baby body parts for a profit. And the language, like all language, in statutes is subject to review and to rethinking and to examination. Does it work? Does it address the crime? Does it miss something? Is there a loophole? So Congress comes in and seeks to investigate its own laws to see if they're working, see if they're doing the job Congress intended. Now, if Congress can't get cooperation from people and can't do that investigation, it cannot do its job for the American people. And in recent history, and this goes to both parties, and it goes back some years, there's been a hesitance for the Congress, the House, and the Senate to enforce its own prerogatives to investigate. The last time the House held someone in contempt was Eric Holder, and that's been 5 years ago. And your viewers will remember, we've gone all through the IRS scandal and this person from Benghazi refusing to show up and that person from that corporation refusing to testify and so on. And we had the same thing. And we got in today's culture, we got good support from the leadership on our subpoenas. We did hold STEM Express in contempt of Congress at our panel level. But Congress needs to think very carefully, in my view, about enforcing its prerogatives to investigate its own laws to serve the American people. If you don't, you know, what you respect, you investigate. If you respect your own laws, you'll investigate whether they're successful. And that takes information. This is an area of selling baby body parts. This is an accounting statute. This is a profit and loss statute. You cannot tell whether it's a success unless you have bank and accounting records. Now, our panel hired a forensic accountant, a world-class CPA, who looks at bank records, puts them on all the spreadsheets, analyzes them the same way an auditor would. But without those bank records and without the ability to get those bank records, that accountant, that forensic accountant, could not do his job. Now, he did a great job, and we got some records, but not the ones we would have liked. So people do not respect Congress's prerogatives, and Congress maybe doesn't respect its own prerogatives to get the issues or get the information that it needs.
March, does that mean then, because we're going to get to this too, you had a lot of findings, and you are recommending prosecution in various states. We're going to get to that. But on the issue of STEM Express, based in California, as I recall, does that mean you have nothing? There's no charges against them, that you are just helpless because they did not respond?
Well, we're not helpless. Investigators make their success by finding other ways to get information. This means finding former employees. This means checking public records. We did subpoena STEM Express's bank, and the bank cooperated. So the bank gave us a lot of their financial records. But what we did do with STEM Express was we got enough information to establish what prosecutors call probable cause. A probable cause means it's likely that a crime has been committed. And we made referral letters of some of the entities that we investigated to federal and state law enforcement authorities and asked them to look further. Now, you may know that Congress can't do a search of somebody's house. We can't issue a search warrant. We have some subpoena power, but it's really limited to the scope of the legislation. An executive branch, a local district attorney, a local attorney, state attorney general, a federal attorney general, they have the power to open a grand jury, to subpoena
March,
documents into that grand jury.
Hold that thought, because we're going to come back to that. And I also want to ask you, what the most stunning moments to you personally, as you were doing all of these, you had all this testimony, and I know you heard a lot of things that we never even saw in the videos, things that were uncovered. And let's talk about that next. My guest is March Bell. He was the staff director and chief counsel for the Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, chaired by Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. And we will return in a second to find out what that committee found this past 12 months. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I want to find out where you get your 3% figure. that you cite for abortion procedures. That's your self-reported abortion statistic.
That's 3% of all the procedures we provide.
And
all the services that we provide.
Okay, well, let's talk about Planned Parenthood revenue from abortions. If you look at the 2013 statistics that you report, abortions from revenue would have been over 86% of your non-government revenue. How do you explain this massive disparity between the amount of revenue you collect from abortion and the fact that you only report 3% of your services being abortion?
Well, I think there's two questions you've sort of mixed in there, so let me try to address both. One is, as we've already stated, federal money does not go for abortion, so the federal portion that we were discussing is reimbursement for preventive care services. I think the other, so that's why they're not, those numbers aren't connected.
You tell me how many of your affiliates receive the majority of their revenue from abortion?
I don't know that answer.
Could you get it for me?
I'll talk to my team.
Thanks.
But I do think it's important to understand that abortion procedures are probably more expensive than some other procedures that we provide, which might, you know, might explain what you're trying to get at.
Okay.
All right, that was Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis grilling Cecile Richards, who is the president of Planned Parenthood. This is Sandy Rios, back with you. And, of course, Planned Parenthood is a central figure in this whole issue of selling baby body parts. We saw the undercover videos. We played them. If you haven't seen them, go on our Facebook page, Google them, go on YouTube. You should be able to find. They are shocking, and it's amazing. One person was laughing about buying a Lamborghini with the money they might make from selling baby body parts. Planned Parenthood, we think, and that's what we're trying to find out, has done very well. This is illegal, as March Bell has just told us, 1993. A law made it a felony, a federal felony, to sell baby body parts for profit. And so March Bell is with us. He is was the staff director and chief counsel for the subcommittee, Selective Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, chaired by Marsha Blackburn. They were investigating what David Dalyden discovered with his undercover videos, and they looked at the middlemen like Stem Cell Express, but there were others. We're going to talk about that, and also Planned Parenthood as well. March, we saw so many shocking things in those David Dalyden videos. We saw them talking about just laughing over meals, laughing about selling baby eyes and brains and kidneys, and it was just very disturbing. And I'm sure you saw all of those before you started this investigation. And my question is for you, in the course of this year-long investigation, what moments or what incidences or testimonies really were the capstone for you in terms of maybe shock, not necessarily shock could be that, but also just things you did not know?
Well, I think that's a very important question. I do want to say that our panel had complete access to the unedited Dalyden videos, and we did find that there was no difference in the unedited versions and the versions that were released by the Senate, his organization, into the press. And that was a big debate we had. But we learned about the issue through his released tapes, but we reviewed the unedited tapes. Now, the most troubling thing, I believe, that was new for me was the callousness and hardness that is going on in the abortion industry. Pro-life people have always known that it was a callous and hard thing to take a child from its mother's womb for convenience and so on. We all know the horribleness of abortion. But the callousness among the staff, the doctors, the organizations presented itself in several ways. One is that the abortion industry is actually a very fragile financial industry from a business point of view. That fragileness makes them very interested in making money. And one of the things we wanted to understand is why they would be motivated to sell baby body parts if they were making so much money in their clinics on abortion. Well, in fact, a group like Planned Parenthood has a lot of money in its political action committee, has a lot of money in its public relations side, but its clinics are on a very thin margin. That thin margin was one of the factors that they self-described as why they would want to sell baby body parts for profit. The profit on an abortion in a Planned Parenthood clinic is between $50 and $75 after everybody's paid. So if you can sell two or three body parts from that baby, you triple your profit because the body parts are sold for $50 to $75. So when they say this, our whole revenue is millions and this is only 3% or this is only 2%, the cost accounting on the ground, a very important factor, showed us where the callousness came in. And here's how it presented. Violations of privacy of the patients that came in. Vulnerable patients making a difficult decision. They violated their HIPAA privacy rights. The people who are getting the consent for the abortion and the consent to donate the fetal tissue are also being paid per tissue. Oh. So they're on a cost-plus basis. They're motivated to not only violate the privacy rights, get in the files of these young patients, but also to get as many body parts as they can.
March.
Then that has a corrupting influence on the doctor. The doctor now realizes that they can make $10,000, $15,000 a month, additional money selling the baby body parts. The doctor is going to change the method of abortion so that the body parts come out in a way that allows them to be resold, to be packaged in the clinic, put in a FedEx box on ice, shipped that night overnight to a researcher. So there's a corruption of the patient care. We're now changing a surgical method to increase our profit. Then at the other end of the spectrum is training. One doctor might know how to do abortion procedures this way, and one of the abortion executives told us that she trained other doctors who were doing what she called messy abortions in how to get out intact babies to increase the donation possibility. So now we're going to train everybody to get all the body parts we can to increase our bottom line. It was this hardness and this callousness, and in many cases, these procedures violated federal regulations, federal law, and in the case of Planned Parenthood, they even violated Planned Parenthood's own internal documents. Planned Parenthood, at the national level, wrote its documents to comply with the federal laws, but at the clinic level, they were ignoring those. And the very doctor who was in charge of those standards told us she never signed a piece of paper saying she hadn't changed the method of abortion, that she told us she changed the method of abortion, she told us she trained others, even though Planned Parenthood's own documents and the federal statute says you cannot change the method. So it was this behavior, one brushstroke at a time, that showed a hard callousness and disregard for the patient who came in. And the disregard for the baby comes in the form of babies born alive, whole babies coming out because of the way they do the preparation for the abortion procedure, the way they do the cervical dilation. Babies come out born alive who are in the viable range of 23, 24, 25, 26 weeks with a heartbeat, and then those babies are boxed up and sent to a researcher, whole babies, not babies who where they crushed a little here and crushed a little there. So it was this hardness toward babies and hardness toward patients that was the big surprise for me.
March.
And we shouldn't be surprised that if you will kill a baby for convenience, it's not a big step to kill the baby in a way that makes you some more money.
March, let's talk about this in a little bit more detail, because I know what you're saying, but let's make it very clear. When you say change the method of abortion, you're saying that they would really actually put the women through much more of an ordeal delivering a whole baby as though it's delivery, when they have their ways of delivering the baby differently. And so they're not being truthful with women in regard to that. They would tell, and so they would, as you said, change their method. And isn't partial birth abortion, like, illegal? Weren't they doing methods similar to that? I mean,
we did think so, and we've made referrals in our report. People can read our report online in the criminal referral section. We do make referrals on partial birth abortion. And many of your viewers have had children. Many of them have been in the waiting room when their own children were delivered. They know what cervical dilation is. And one of the prized body parts for sale that sells for over $1,000, sometimes $1,500, is an intact skull, what they call a calvarium, the whole baby's head. Now, if the baby is turned to breech so that the feet come out first, those body parts that they're not interested in, arms and legs and torsos, can be removed first, and the head can be removed last, because they're going to resell that head for $1,500 or $1,000 and make a lot of profit on it. The middleman is. So the changing technique often included turning the baby around in the womb from a normal head-first delivery to a feet-first delivery. This is clearly a partial birth abortion violation. It's clearly a violation of the federal laws not allowing the technique to be changed. It's a violation of all patient ethics. It's something the woman did not consent to, was not told about when she signed a one-page form to donate tissue, which was a deceptive form. So yes, the details are in the report. There's a what we used to call an ick factor, kind of a stomach churning factor to this whole thing. But this is part of the hardening of this industry. That the baby's going to die anyway. What difference does it make if I turn it around and get the body part I want because I get more money for it? That's the attitude in the clinic.
And the irony too, March, Planned Parenthood boasts so much about they're for women's health and protecting women and women's rights. And really, in a situation like this, the woman is just the conduit for a commodity. And they obviously don't care about her pain and suffering. They also don't care about the psychological effect on her. And March, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you talked about them violating the privacy rights, let's see if I understand this correctly. They would actually be able to look in the records and kind of speculate on whether they could harvest a part based on her personal circumstances. And then they also told women, did they not, that these body parts would go to cure certain illnesses, which it has never been proven that they are a cure for any particular illness. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
It is exactly the kind of thing. If you can, just in your listeners' minds, imagine a tissue tech on Tuesday gets all the orders for baby body parts that she needs from a university. She then goes into the abortion clinic on a Wednesday, and she says, I need to see all the files. I need to see the patient terminal. I need to know who's at this gestation period and who isn't. I need to know who's HIV positive. I need to know who might have a Down syndrome child because I'm looking for Down syndrome tissue. So she, the tissue tech, is given access to patients' private files. Now, in those files, she has to learn the patient's name. And she goes out in the hall, or she goes down where the counseling room is and says, I'm looking for Sue or Carol or Linda. And because she knows that they're getting abortions that day, she knows their gestation period, she knows their situation. She sits down with them and only spends 5 or 8 minutes and in a deceptive way says, wouldn't you like to donate your tissue to find a cure for these diseases? Now, the law requires when you donate tissue that you donate to a specific study for a specific purpose. These women are never told, will you donate your baby's eyes to study macular degeneration? They're never told, will you donate your baby's brain to study spinal cord injuries? They're never told, will you donate your baby's liver to study cancer? They're just told generically, wouldn't you like to help cure these diseases? And that is a violation of the law. The look inside, without permission, the look inside their private medical file violates the HIPAA statute. And we met with the Inspector General of HHS. They agreed with us about that. They said they would help investigate. They've investigated Planned Parenthood over 51 times for various types of violations. But yes, this is the coarsening of what is supposed to be and is advertised to be caring about women. It's no, the woman is a now seen as a profit center. She's a profit center. Yeah. How many tests can we give her? How much can we make on her abortion? Yeah. How much can we sell her baby body parts? She's not viewed as a patient anymore. She's a profit center.
And, you know, March, you think about those women who saw those videos or heard about them, who consented, believed in a woman's right to choose. How traumatic to think that someone did that to your baby. I don't care what you say. The conscience has been seared and breached and abused in so many different ways. My guest is March Bell. He was the staff director and chief counsel for the subcommittee, Selective Investigative Panel on Infant Lives. And we will return in just a second to find out what they recommended and what March hopes will happen in the next Congress. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
With a mediator, what have you been able to facilitate a lump cost for the price of contraceptives? Is there a unit price that you've been able to lower down to get a price fixed? Can you give me that number?
It's
being reported by those numbers that it's about $3 that you're paying for the average contraceptive.
Actually, it's very much all over the map, as you know, and it depends on
the average. And so
it's not. I disagree with you. I don't
think
that's
correct.
This is a very
salient point because this is a profit center. Because what ends up happening, you're reimbursed by the federal government and Medicaid at $35, right? So if we're truly looking at mediation and spreading the wealth of the pharmaceuticals, when we get a break, we ought to pass it on. Don't you agree?
Well, as you know...
Don't you agree? Because that facilitates more services, does it not, Ms. Richards?
Our entire focus is on serving as many patients as we can.
That is not exactly true, because what you've done now, and the reason I can show this is you've narrowed the focus. What we end up having is there's very few primary care docs out there because they can't afford to stay in practice. So what you've done is narrow the scope of the practice so where there's profit centers. This is my time, so don't interrupt it. And so from that standpoint, what you've done is narrowed that focus so that you're profiting off death, because the number, the where you're making that profit center is actually off abortions. And that's appalling to me. So thank you very much.
Congressman Paul Gosar grilling Cecile Richards, the head of Planned Parenthood. You're making money off death. Well, I think we'd all agree with that. And short of death, body parts. March Bell is my guest. We're talking about what that selective investigative panel on infant lives found out in investigating the David Dow Leiden videos, the undercover videos, investigating STEM Express, all the middle partners, having Harvard look into the business model. They learned a lot, and they spent a year doing it. And March, again, was the chief counsel for the subcommittee. So, March, you found out a lot of things, and one of those I know was the involvement of major universities. Can you talk about that?
Sure. One of the things we found out was that many universities develop what we called a cozy relationship with a clinic near a university campus, and the relationship began to be blurred when biotechnicians from the university would simply go down to the local clinic, harvest baby body parts, and bring them back to the university for research. Also, the relationship got cozy when the abortion doctors in the clinic became visiting professors and were giving that award, or volunteer professors at the university. And then the university medical doctors would go down and cover the shifts at the local abortion clinics. And there began to be this back and forth of friendship and exchange of value and exchange of services, which began to taint ethics. In the case of the University of New Mexico, the tissue tech was sent down from the university medical school to get some brains of babies and bring them back for high school summer camp to use to dissect. That's how casual, that's how deteriorated medical ethics became. Just a phone call, hey, we're sending our tissue tech down to get some body parts because we're having summer camp and we'd like the kids to dissect some human brain parts. So this was a model we looked into. It exists at some universities in a very sad way that is not the best of American medical values. In other universities, it's done much better. University of Washington is a high volume in Seattle. It's a high volume fetal tissue acquirer, but they follow all the rules. Now, the interesting thing about some of these universities is they would use the tissue for nearly any project they could think of, like summer camp. University of Washington, on the other hand, uses fetal tissue exclusively to study baby anomalies, infant anomalies, things related to illnesses or blindness in the NICU. So we had to understand the wide spectrum of a declining ethical situation like we had in Albuquerque with the University of Mexico or the University of Washington. And we looked at those as Congress charged us to do, what's good, what's bad, what should be changed, what should be adjusted, what should be thought through.
So, Mark, you did all of this, and you found a lot of, you identified probably, I'm guessing now, maybe 10 different states or clinics or entities that you felt should be investigated by local authorities. Can you give us an idea of some of those and what you thought needed to be investigated?
I can. We basically produced 15 referral letters, some regulatory, some criminal. Some had more than one entity. These are letters that are with 80 to 200 pages of documents, business invoices, and other things that showed that some entities were violating not only state law, but maybe federal law. We sent those to Florida, Texas, Arizona, Arkansas, Ohio, California, and these were attorneys general who were very helpful and very interested, very cooperative, very receptive of our referral letters. So one of the deliverables of the panel, the things we delivered at the end of the year, was a large spectrum of potential criminal violations that we thought revealed areas for legal change in the law, for increased enforcement. It's one thing to have a law, and another thing at the U.S. Department of Justice to have a unit that's dedicated to abortion-related crimes. Department of Justice does not have such a unit. Department of Justice has never investigated the sale of baby body parts. They've never investigated a Gosnell-type case. They don't have lawyers who are assigned to do that. They don't have a whistleblower hotline where former clinic employees can call the Department of Justice and say, let me tell you what the doctor I'm working for has been doing. And then they could, that lawyer could take that phone call and call the FBI and say, we need to open a case. That's not going on. So we hoped that the referral letters would reveal a gap between the criminal or potential criminal conduct and the amount of enforcement. Now, we were very encouraged that the local attorney generals and district attorneys in parts of the country who said, we'll take this on. But the U.S. Department of Justice did not take it on and has never taken it on. And we're hopeful that in a couple of weeks we'll have an attorney general that will look at these types of referrals and this type of conduct. So the referral letters were to reveal the gap between what the law says on paper and the law enforcement people who are supposed to do their job.
All right, so you've sent those to the local authorities, and hopefully they will follow through. The Justice Department, even as we speak, Jeff Sessions is being grilled and will be this week. To be the new Attorney General, we know that Jeff Sessions is pro-life, and perhaps when you convened or expired on December 30th of 2016, was that one of your recommendations to the new Attorney General, or are you just hoping? Yes. Okay.
Yes. No. Not just hoping. Hope doesn't really work. We have written it down in black and white. This is also the recommendation of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which had their own investigation. They sent criminal referrals to the Department of Justice, as did we. We each had slightly different approaches to the investigation, but we were in touch with the Senate. We read their report. They read our report. Senator Sessions' staff has seen our report because the House and Senate share these things. So this is in writing that you need to establish a unit, a section that to go after born alive issues, to go after violations of criminal violations of Medicaid fraud by these abortion clinics, violations of ethics, violations of selling baby body parts. These laws to have meaning need to be enforced, and they need to be enforced because we believe in the rule of law. Congress has passed the laws to make certain behavior, certain misconduct unacceptable.
March, this next question is a little sticky, so I'll ask it, and you can plead the fifth then. But I personally was very upset that Congress did not vote to defund Planned Parenthood in the last year during the budget process. So now here we come. We have a new Congress that's just convened, and we know that most of Congress, really, certainly the Republicans, are pro-life. But how do you expect, or do you have any expectation, or can you say what you think this new Congress will do with this information you provided in terms of their own funding of Planned Parenthood?
Well, I just want to remind you that at about the time that the section that I worked for, or the select panel, was formed, Congress did vote on the budget bill to defund Planned Parenthood in the House, and the reconciliation of the Senate, and President Obama vetoed that. So there has been a vote in the House to defund Planned Parenthood. What will happen in the coming weeks is there'll be a vote on what's called the budget reconciliation, which does not require, cannot be filibusters, does not require 60 votes in the Senate, to defund Planned Parenthood. And by defund Planned Parenthood, what they will do is they will prevent any group that does abortions from getting Medicaid reimbursements. And this will take Planned Parenthood out of the Medicaid business and put that Medicaid money into legitimate non-abortion clinics around the country, of which there are thousands, some of them right down the street from Planned Parenthood, some of them that do the services that Planned Parenthood says they do, and that money will go to clinics that do not do abortions. So I'm hopeful that in the coming weeks there will be a vote on the reconciliation, and that's something your listeners can pay attention to, contact their members, and express their views on.
March, as you were doing this, and I know that you and Mariam, your wife, are strong pro-lifers and have really been very active in the movement for decades, really. And this is an issue close to your heart. So my question is, when you were in conducting this investigation, what did this do to you personally? We only have a few minutes left here, but was there any, did it get personal for you, and in what way?
Well, it's very personal, Sandy, and thanks for asking. It's personal because for me and for my wife, and maybe for many of your viewers, that this is the way God has chosen to bring his image bearers into the world, through women becoming pregnant and bringing those babies to term when they're mature. And what I really was seriously challenged by was how hardened and callous people are, the opponents of children are toward this idea, and the idea that everybody's born this way, every life begins this way, every life has a natural beginning and a natural end. And it really was shocking to see how strongly opposed to that whole concept our opponents were. It wasn't just a issue disagreement. It was a very deep, spiritual, soulful disagreement about the nature of the way things are.
As we look to a new president, President Trump, it even seems strange saying that, in January 20th, it's coming up so quickly. Do you have any indication, Marsh, that he knows about your research, and just your thoughts on what you think he might do with the information?
Well, we have the information has gotten to President Trump. Marsha Blackburn, the chair, is on his transition. Kellyanne Conway is a strong pro-lifer and has seen the information. One of the things we're encouraged about in the new administration is National Institute of Health. We've met with people at that organization and have learned that they don't need the amount of they don't need aborted fetal body parts to do their job. And we're hopeful the Trump administration will adjust the behavior of NIH so that what we call natural demise infants, parents can donate a tissue part. Your viewers may be surprised to learn, as I was, that all over the country, premature babies are lost. They're lost in the NICU.
30 seconds.
They're lost prior to being able to go in there, and they want to donate a liver. Yeah. They want to donate a heart.
Right.
So we're hopeful that will change in the coming administration.
That's great, Marge. Listen, this has been great. I appreciate so much the hard work that you put in this year and the work of your panel, and we just pray that it bears really, really great fruit in the coming year. Marge Bell, my guest this morning. Thank you so much, Marge.
Thank you for having me.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.